the way that they were talking, the verbiage, it was like 10-4, and it was like all super serious, and I was trying not to
laugh
at how goofy it really did sound, but how serious it was being taken.
Yeah.
It was so good.
13B, got your ears on over?
Yeah. And
10-4, good buddy.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody, this is everybody's favorite hype man's hype man, Vernon Manning, Team MVP, and you're listening to Understable Discourse.
God damn it, Vernon.
Understable Discourse.
I gave you a card. Do it again. I said it too. I looked right at it. Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody, this is everybody's favorite hype man's hype man, Vernon Manning, Team MVP, and you're listening to Unstable Discourse.
There we go.
And welcome in to Season 3, Episode 11 of Unstable Discourse.
Damn, son!
Wow, 11?
Does that make you think of anybody?
No. Who should I?
Listen, I wasn't on Stranger this Things. Episode, yeah. And here I am, Lauren Lakeberg.
And Lauren Lakeberg.
Yeah.
Wait, check the time.
7:58.
7:58, she'd find a way.
Yep.
7 plus cool. 5 plus also, 8 is 37.
There's a band out there, 311.
Plus 1.
Maybe we need to drop a 311 track right here. Well, that was cool.
It is the color of your energy, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, Amber.
You're going to do Amber?
You know who loves 311? Ed Radakovitz.
Yes.
Really? He does?
Ed and I talked about 311 on Saturday or Sunday.
Does he do the cruise? Do you know? There's a 311 cruise. Did you know that?
I did not know that, but I bet he
on March
11th,
you can go on a cruise with the band 311.
He also offered to perform a 311 cover live on the show if we ever wanted that.
Really?
So,
what do you think he
would
do?
With him singing or...
I don't know. I know he plays the guitar.
What about Doc on keys?
I'm always in for that.
We would have to do like a mashup of 311 and...
The Allman Brothers.
The Allman Brothers. Yeah. There we go.
There we go.
I didn't know where you were going with that, but yes.
The problem is I'm old, and to me 311 is if you live in the city and you need a new light bulb in your...
The information
your traffic light thing in the city services is 311.
Yeah.
Which is also very cool.
Yeah. Well, it is, but I have super no idea cool. what any of you are talking about.
On that note, I'm gonna do the intros in reverse this time. It's your permitted We are joined today by Leo the Doc Borowski for your second appearance on the show.
Thanks for having me again. I figured after the first one, it was one and done.
Oh, no. You were clean, man. You were great.
Forever in my heart.
We also have Jason Callahan of Bag of Tricks.
Thanks for having me again. I figured after like 30, it was 30 and done.
You have nearly worn out the welcome.
Yeah, I'm getting there. Let's see if it's this episode.
We also have Sean Callahan of Delwood Disc Golf.
Good evening, children.
And Ryan Fancher of Unstable Disc Golf Gear.
Yeah, okay.
We also got Sheila Callahan of Delwood Disc Golf in the house. Lady in the shop.
That's right.
That one lady in the shop. I don't know. It's your wife or something?
Wasn't that an M. Night Shyamalan movie?
Yeah.
Lady in the water. Lady in the shop.
Lady in the shop. Yeah, I think so.
And I'm Alex Seminary of Disc Golf Chicago. We are here to do a sequel episode. This is the Tourney Journey Part 2. Mm-hmm. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you may know that the very first episode we did was the Tourney Journey. I like that we're doing the sequel with 5 times the amount of energy we had on the first episode, by the way.
Yeah.
Well 5 times 0 is still 0.
Yes. Yeah.
So we had some. But the Tourney Journey was our first episode, and we were talking about what do you go through when you're planning a tournament? What's the checklist look like if you're going to host the tournament? And now you guys have hosted so many huge tournaments since then, and we're just coming off of Clash 6. So we're going to talk more in depth about planning tournaments and what is it like to be a TD for a major event? How do you deal with the things that pop up? The way I phrased it in the post was, let's talk about the plans, the pains, and the pleasures of hosting a major tournament.
It sounds sensual.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like you have to spend big money for that
kind
of stuff.
3 full seasons worth of planning tournaments since the last time we did this episode.
Yeah, that's true.
If you go back to when we first did the first episode,
right.
We were that COVID had just happened. So all the pre-planning we had done in the November prior in 2019 all shit the bed. Mm-hmm. So we had to then the next couple of months plan and then cancel and replan and cancel. So 2020 actually happened late.
Yeah.
And we've done 2021 and we are in and almost done with 2022. So it's been three full seasons since we've...
Throw a Silver Series event in that mix as well.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. You guys have done some tournaments you had never done before in that time frame.
Absolutely, yes.
Mm-hmm. So there's plenty more to talk about. And we have Doc joining us now who's got more tournament planning experience than probably anybody in the area, right? I mean, that's got to be true.
Definitely, in my opinion.
Yeah, maybe. He's a, maybe.
Yeah. Probably.
He's only the right-hand man to anything that I do, for sure.
Were you not planning tournaments before starting to work with these guys?
Not TDing them, but helping them for the last 15, 20 years in the area.
You've been silently behind the scenes on so many things. Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah.
That's the first time I think anyone has ever described Doc as being silent.
Silently. Yeah. Yes, I'm not silent. You know me.
Only when he's in Facebook jail is he silent.
Yeah.
Have you been in Facebook jail before?
Never.
You've never been in jail?
I have never been.
Oh, I thought you were.
No, my posts are very tactful. They're not threatening.
They're cryptic.
They're not racist. They're tactful.
There have been a few different names on Facebook associated with you.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Really? People know you by a lot of different names because you always have different names on Facebook.
Absolutely.
Should I have introduced you as Bob Steelballs on this episode?
I'm no longer Bob Steelballs on Facebook.
It's in parentheses on your name.
It is.
He didn't have the ID to back it up.
Yes. It was too much work for me to actually prove to Facebook that my name was really Bob Steelballs. I did send them a very sympathetic letter telling them that my father gave me that name after, and I was harassed and bullied my entire life by the name of Steelballs, and they didn't buy it.
Shocker. Yeah.
I remember being thoroughly intimidated when I knew of you, but I didn't know you yet. You were just this guy on Facebook that I was like,
with steel balls.
This guy's kind of scary, man. Like he's I remember you. Yeah. I remember feeling like you were very intimidating.
Anybody's profile picture is a hand holding two steel balls. Yeah, it's intimidating.
I was intimidated as well.
Yeah, I'm a cuddly bear.
Until they cross the wrong path.
Then I'm a pyro.
Burn it all to the ground.
Uh-huh. We're recapping Clash. There's a lot to talk about. We got a lot packed into this one. I say we get it going.
That's what she said.
Well done. Let's get into Fired Up.
Fired Up. All right. It's different. Oh, yeah. All right. I'll take that.
I know where that was going at the end.
Who's the most fired up today?
I am fired up.
Okay. We'll take the lead. Doc, what are you fired up about?
I'm fired up about the volunteer staff we had at the Clash of the Canyons.
Hell yeah.
I found out on Sunday night that there was some guy who drove in from like Ohio.
Cam Jones.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I didn't know either.
You know, we have so much stuff going on that weekend and, you know, Sheila's handling all the volunteers and stuff. That the volunteer stuff is so far off,
right?
You know, the path. But somebody drove all the way in from Ohio, right?
Cleveland.
Yeah.
Just to say, hey, I'm going to spot all weekend.
All weekend. Out of control.
And it wasn't just him. I mean, our local volunteers were amazing. You know, they had different shifts. And I mean, so many of them came up to me and said, hey, I'm done. What can I do for the next 6 hours? I want to do more.
Yeah. Matt Kelly is one of those people. He took the job and ran with it.
He did.
He was there all day long.
I spent a lot of time with Matt this weekend and he's been coming out to our leagues. He's super solid. And I watched him work his butt off all weekend.
And it didn't matter what task Sheila had them do. You know, it was like, can you go sit in the parking lot in a chair and make sure people didn't come in here and park for 6 hours? They were like, absolutely.
I would love to, Sheila.
Yeah.
Yes,
Sheila.
That just is just amazing task? To me.
Whatever you say, lady in the shop.
Yeah. The community that we have, their drive just to come out and help and be a part of this event it fired me up.
Yeah, go ahead, Ryan.
No, I was going to say, it's the only way it really came together like it did.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. We can plan as much as we want and dot as many I's and cross as many lowercase j's, strike that, reverse it, as we want. But the volunteers are the only way that it all comes together, because without those tiny little details, everything falls apart.
Absolutely.
So, mm-hmm.
It's not just about the fact that they volunteer. It's the fact that they work hard. Brad Perini, you were telling me about Brad. Yeah. On hole four.
So Big Jim Heath, as we all know, is the official spotter of hole four.
Yep.
So he decided he was going to play. After coming back from a little bit of a hiatus, with competing where he wasn't really feeling it.
Yep.
So it was a surprise when he reached out and he said,
a good surprise.
A good surprise for sure.
Great. Yeah.
Stoked to see that he wanted to compete again.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, what do you mean, dude?
What's going to happen to hole four, man?
What the
fuck? No, man.
So, you know, we got him in the event and it was awesome. And right away I was like, well, we need to replace Big Jim Heath on hole four. That's a very important hole for spotting. And the only person that I had thought of was Brad Perini, because he had been doing that job, but on course hole seven, tournament hole 12 for the last 2 years. And he really got a kick out of saying like that was his hole, yep, because Jim, you know, got to say that, or James got to say that was that hole four was his hole.
Yep.
So I was like, I remember where it was, we were on the path. I was walking, I think I was walking to the bathroom from the shop, and he was walking from like 12 to 13. And I said, hey man, you know, Big Jim Heath is going to be playing Clash. So I need somebody to step up. And I said all of this to him, like, you're the first person I thought of. And
oh,
I swear I saw a tear in his eye for sure. Yeah. So, yeah, he killed it.
That's how hard the spotters go. They're honored to be given like the challenging jobs.
There was there was a card driving off of hole four white. So it must've been an MPO card, but he was standing by the basket like he was waiting for the ball to be hiked so he could just obliterate the defensive lineman in front of him.
Yeah.
He could not wait for those discs to be thrown. He looked like Jack and Cooper waiting for you to throw the ball. Just couldn't be more excited and in the zone. I could have ran down there and like got right in his face and he wouldn't even have recognized that I was there because he was just so into what he was doing. It was great.
Yeah. I don't know who the spotter was, but on our course hole seven, where they played the long tee, you know, it's a couple drives. So it's a drive to the middle and it's still another drive to the hole. That spotter was running.
Yeah.
I mean, I was out there, I was filming some stuff. I watched five or six cards go by. He ran. I mean, he'd start in the first area and he would run to the left, run to the right. And as soon as they were all done teeing and started to walk, he'd run as fast as he could to the basket.
Yeah.
Wow.
Fun fact about Greg, that guy.
And kept doing it over and over and over again. And then when he was done, he'd run back. I mean, he didn't casually walk. Mm-hmm. I mean, he just,
it's so
the
tough.
Seriousness and the, you know, that these guys take, you know, the passion they have for doing this stuff, it just blows me away. That's what,
it's got to be humbling.
It definitely, for me, looking back, it's a couple of things. It's one, it's weird because, like Doc said, we aren't really thinking about it. Not in the fact that because Sheila has it on lock as far as communications to those people, but because I know that they are that dedicated that I don't need to worry about whether or not someone's on that hole, even if Sheila hasn't communicated, which in almost all cases, I'm sure you did. They would have communicated to each other. Mm-hmm. That's how serious they take it.
Mm-hmm.
They get that, hey, let's make this easier for them, just doing our jobs without being told. Yeah. And that's huge. And I totally forgot the other thing I was going to say.
Well, I'll chime in then. I think hopefully part of what it is then is a bit of a sense of pride that, hey, welcome to our area. Welcome to our course. This is how we do things here.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We make sure the J's are dotted.
Right.
And not crossed.
And not crossed.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think now would be a perfect time to insert some sappy music and the list of the volunteers' names being
100
like read
they,
off.
Like they died.
Right here.
Now.
Ryan Cavelli.
Trevor DeCook.
John Andrist.
Tim Jelson.
Brad Perini.
Greg Mayer.
Ed Schenkenfelder.
Cam Jones.
Heath Wayman.
Justin Herrero.
Peter Fagan.
Maddie Callahan.
Matt Callie.
Kay Borman.
Danny Hansen.
Denise Hartley.
Vernon Manning.
Tim Potter.
Amanda Berlin.
Mike Apostolou.
Paula Borowski.
Joe Moore.
Donovan Livingston.
Alex Seminary.
Cam Jones.
TJ, Alex's friend.
Mandy Turner.
And more.
Well, I did want to say a few specifics about some.
Yeah.
You mentioned Cam. Cam Jones came up from Cleveland. You know, he lived in Chicago for a while and doesn't live there right now. He's been away for a while.
Played a ton of our events when he was here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He recently donated $100 to our Force Reserve Tour Series for something he's not going to see, has nothing to do with, just was like, I see you guys from Cleveland. I love what you're doing. Here's my support.
That's cool. Mm.
And when I saw him standing here, standing at Delwood, I was like, oh, dope. You came up to play. It's great to see you back. And he's like, oh, no, I'm volunteering. And I was like, what? You drove up here to volunteer for the weekend?
That's what I said, too. I was like, I didn't, first of all, because we can go the off season and there's a lot of people I don't see. Not saying that Cam's a fair weather golfer, but like in his case, I didn't see him because he moved.
Yeah.
Well, I would typically wait until like March or April and then see everybody again and catch up over this, you know, holidays or what have you. And I just didn't think about it because I hadn't seen him. So when I saw him again, I was like, dude, bro, where you been? He's like, I moved. And I'm like, wait, why are you here then? Mm-hmm. And then he's like, I'm here to volunteer. It blew my mind. It blew me away.
I got to see that interaction because I was standing at the register when that took place. And I can say from my perspective, the look on your face, I almost saw a tear well in your eye because you were just so into the fact that this dude drove two states away just to be
here for
you.
That is the type of stuff. This is what I was going to say. Now I remember. That stuff with Cam, Justin Herrero being there all weekend and just going, what do you need? Matt Kelly, Mike Apostolou. There's 10 names we haven't even mentioned yet, and we'll get into it later in the episode. But the amount of fans that those dudes give is the reason why I do it. And that starts with our crew. That idea is born with Ryan and Doc and Sheila. And when we go, oh, yeah, what if we did this? And it's like, ooh, okay, it's a little bit more exciting. Oh, well, what if we did this? Oh, it's a little bit more exciting. And then as that group of people builds, the closer we get to it. And, you know, then the Cam Jones drive 6 hours to come and just stand in a hole and wave a flag. It's the reason why we do it, man.
Yeah.
It really is.
And I don't want to say we took advantage of the volunteers because that's not what I mean. But on Friday, because there was no weather, and we'll get into this later, Friday was such a perfect day that Sean and I were looking at each other like, what do we do right now? What are we doing? We got to actually see from like, you know, take a step back and see everything that was going on because we weren't so hyper focused on, oh my gosh, so-and-so isn't down here to spot, or there's a card that's this, or this score is wrong, or anything like that. It was just, everything was so taken care of that we could see what we had built and look around and see everybody enjoying themselves. And oh man, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And that's all because of the help we had. Yeah. You know, all the people who stepped up. From people, you know, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, but announcing people, doing player meetings, something that Sean and I do, you know, through the entire day is giving 50 player meetings.
Every tournament, every weekend. Yeah.
He didn't give
one. I did one. I did one player meeting and I fumbled through it because it's like player meetings are one of those things where
you get into a rhythm.
You get into that groove of like, there's a cadence.
And it's all because of the help we have.
And then that.
And all the people who.
Mike Apostolou being the type of guy that he is, he already had that groove figured out two nights before when he was laying in bed practicing. Guaranteed.
It showed.
It big time showed. I mean, to the point where we were stepping back and we were kind of cracking jokes about Mike saying that like, he's running the show.
Oh, dude, he was.
He ran that tournament. Yeah. I was just able to stand by and go, hey, Doc, we got to go kill some bees. Like, what? Mike's got this locked up. Let's go figure out some bees and hornets that are on a few holes. Yeah, I can't thank him enough. He is really becoming a really good friend and low-key funny as hell and doesn't know it. And I love that about him.
Super funny.
So, yeah, Mike Apostolou, my hero for the event, no doubt.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the best part of it was we could do that and not have to worry about, are these guys going to stay on time? What's going to happen if someone doesn't show up in the group?
Yeah.
You know, they're going to have to pull somebody from it. I didn't worry about any of that stuff.
Yep.
And it didn't even cross my mind when you said, hey, let's go take a ride. We have to go kill some bees. All right, let's go kill some bees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mike's I didn't think about anything that was going on at Tournament Central, which we would normally be completely focused on every tournament to try to stay on time. And put out fires when they happen.
Oh, sorry. I just started laughing because there were two Mike Apostolou moments that were very funny to me. One was when the ice cream man showed up and it was like playing he's playing ice cream man music and Mike just like, I don't know what's the right word. He just like beelined it to the ice cream man and was like, hey man, we're running a tournament here. I don't know what he said, but you could see the way see the way he walked and the way he talked to that guy and then came back and the ice cream man turned his music down. Mike took care of business.
Yeah. It was great.
He stood at the truck as the guy like did a slow fade with the music. Yeah. And as soon as it stopped, he turned around and walked back. Yeah. He was determined that guy wasn't going to play one more note.
Sean and I were there and we had two-way radios for the guys down on 13B to determine when the next card could tee off. And Mike said over the two-way, is 13 clear? And one of the spotters said, yeah, 13 should be clear. And Mike got back on and said, is 13 clear? Yes or no? And just Sean like and I just looked at each other like
dang.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. Oh, it was so good.
It was sick.
That was the other moment I was going to talk about.
Yeah.
That was so another good thing that was, we had the walkies last year. We didn't really utilize them as much as we should have. But this year when we had them,
it was great.
We needed them for that alone. Mm-hmm. And the communication that I could hear, I was just standing there. That was the thing about it. I'm going to just sound like a broken record. We were able to just stand and listen for any potential problems that could come up mm-hmm. when you're at that scale.
Yeah.
And it was like harmonious around us because all of the things that we have implemented and maybe taught some of these guys and showed some of them or given the stage for these things to happen mm-hmm. were happening. Mm-hmm. And the walkies was one of the things that I was like, damn, the way that they were talking, the verbiage, it was like 10-4 and it was like all super serious. And I was trying not to laugh.
What's your 20?
At how goofy it really did sound, but how serious it was being taken.
Yeah.
It was so good.
13B, got your ears on over?
Yeah. And Joe
10-4, Moore, good buddy.
Yeah. And Joe Moore, after every single time it happened, looking at me and going, dude, these guys are on it, man. Dude, these guys are on it. Like, it was hysterical and yeah. awesome.
Great job.
We really could keep talking about these
spotters. I could talk all night about mm-hmm. it.
I wanted to, yeah. Well, this is still the first person's fired up, but I do want to shout out Greg, mm-hmm. who you introduced yeah. me to on Hole 7. Mm-hmm. What was the last name? Greg Mayer, who had just started listening to the show, like, what, days before?
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, hey, I just started listening.
Oh, he had talked to me too. Same thing. Yep.
Yeah. I just wanted to say shout out to Greg for being a fantastic spotter. I think that's the guy you were talking about who was running back on and seven. Forth.
It could be. I wasn't yep. sure.
So he was going super yes, hard. Yep. But
it was unbelievable.
He also had like really, it. Really good, like kind words to say about the show and how much he just found it, but loves it and mm-hmm. is appreciative of what we're doing. And that's, you know, I say it all the time. That kind of feedback makes this so much more fun to do, knowing, mm-hmm. hearing from people what it means to them or that even if it's just, hey, you guys are cracking me up or hey, whatever the feedback is, mm-hmm. it really makes a difference.
Is this the guy that brought in the Delwood magazine that had us all sign it or is it somebody else?
No.
I think it was somebody else.
That was somebody else.
Somebody else? Oh, okay. Yep.
Peter
Newman
Fagan. Holy shit. That kid was phenomenal.
Where was he?
He was all over the place. All over the place to the point where I think I'm trying to remember. Everything was a blur from the weekend. Maybe Friday or Saturdays.
He was definitely our all day
feature
Friday.
Round. Yeah. I like pulled him and he came with us. And I think I did that with Matt Kelly too. But I mean, he was the type of dude that like, I didn't need to, he's watched enough Jomez and Gatekeeper and GK Pro rounds that he's like, I got this. Mm-hmm. I've been studying. I've been doing my homework, you know? So he was another dude that I was just like, oh, there's this dude like mm-hmm. that I kind of, in this case, hardly know.
Yeah.
You know, in the case of Peter, everybody else I'm pretty tight with.
Yeah.
But man, that kid just was like on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was doing the over-under with the mic cord. He's a lighting guy or a sound guy
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, he was.
And mm-hmm. he was just details, you know, little shit like that just kills it for me.
And if I'm not mistaken, he started out sitting in a chair in a parking lot going, you can't park here
yes,
for
he
like 6 hours.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's then correct. He probably slowly realized on his own that he was better than that job and said, I'm going to get the fuck out of here and go find some cords to wrap up yeah. because I'm better than sitting in a chair.
Which, by the way, he did an unbelievable job yes. of yeah. wrapping that cable.
Yes. Don't look at me. I do it the wrong way, but it comes out good.
You do it the right way, except you're left-handed, so it's backwards to me.
Oh, God.
And I just do it the wrong way every time.
Man.
Correct. No matter how hard I try.
I want to say, I want to spend time on every single spotter, but it's yeah. just not realistic. But I do quickly yeah. want to be like, the people that have been shouted out in the past. Michele Lopez, Tim Potter, Alyssa Donovan, Vern.
Vern Manning on hole 9, yeah.
Vern with the intro cracked me up so hard.
Yeah.
Joe Moore. I mean, you mentioned Joe him, Moore, but yeah. dude, could anybody, no one can ever do the announcing ever again.
He yeah. is, Joe Moore is like a gentle giant.
Yeah.
In so many ways, genuinely concerned, and I love this about him, about each inflection of each name, like, He is laying in bed thinking about the next day's program
mm-hmm.
every time he's ever helped us with anything. So He is just so incredible.
And he has more energy than my four-year-old grandson, who will just run around in a circle for an hour.
Yes.
Monday night, he was at Leagues, and I heard him from a couple holes away. He, I don't know, made a putt or something, and I heard a woo, and I looked at the people on my car like, I wonder who that was, and everybody laughed because we all knew that was definitely Joe Moore. Like, you can hear him from across the course. He actually shot super hot that night, by the
way. Listener of the show as well. Yeah. And if you didn't know about this, Snapchat, get a snap.
Yeah.
He does a thing called Fry-yay.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't do it every Friday, but he stays consistent when he's feeling it. And it is the way you want to start your Friday with Joe Moore.
I check my Snapchat a few times a day on Fridays to see if he posted a Fry-yay video.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. All right. Let's keep it moving. Jason, what are you fired up about?
Oh, we're still fired up?
Yeah. This was
I thought we were about to wrap the episode.
This was just Doc's fired up.
Oh, geez. It's just my fired up that lasted an hour.
Well, the volunteers, right? I mean, that's
I wanted to talk about the volunteers. No. So physically I'm here, but mentally, I'm sorry, I'm not here tonight because in T-minus less than 24 hours, I'm going to be headed east across this great country, and I'm not stopping till I get salt in my lungs and my toes in the sand. No sleep till North Carolina.
No sleep till. Raleigh.
we're leaving tomorrow after work, headed to North Carolina. We're going to be there for 9 days. It's going to be fantastic. Damn. Yep.
You going to hit some courses while you're out there?
Yeah, you know it. I'll be hitting up Big Red Woods. I heard that's a good one that I just made up. I'm not gonna.
There are tons of redwoods in North Carolina.
Holler
at Ian Yelton while you're out there. He'll tell you where to go.
Sure. Yeah, I'll hit him up. And
or he's in Charlotte. I'm not sure where he's at.
Yeah, you'll be right next to him. He is in North Carolina somewhere.
But super looking forward to that. Not doing four jobs these days, but I'm still doing three jobs.
Finally, unplug a little bit.
Yeah.
He works three jobs.
I haven't had a chance to take a vacation in years. I'm going to see my dad, mine and Sean's dad. I don't own him exclusively. We're related. Yeah. And we try to do an annual trip. We did that for a couple of years, but COVID, BS, blah, blah, blah. I haven't been there in a couple of years. So super looking forward to
it. Will there be a ladder on site?
No. But ironically, I called my dad to give him an update earlier, and he was on a ladder when I was talking to him.
Risky business.
Oh, good idea.
Yeah. I was like, easy up there, Pops.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah, I can't wait. We're going to hit up some South Carolina spots, too, while we're there. We're doing like 5 days with my dad, and then 4 days, our own little trip, the three of us, and we're going to go down to South Carolina and do some touristy stuff. Yeah.
That'll be nice.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast. Can't wait.
Sean, dope. We fired up about.
Yes, sir. Well, today I was able to work on Callahan Acres for a little while.
Nice.
So it had actually been like a couple of months since I was able to do that. It gets hot. The tournament schedule gets hot as well. And there are so many things to plan for and do that I just weeks go by. You don't even get any chance. I'm cutting grass, but, getting in there and carving out fairways and imagining shots that I want to create out here. I was able to do that for about 5 hours today. Needed it so badly, especially after Clash weekend. It's I've said for many years, it's therapy for me. I just get to be by myself. And like, I didn't even have, headphones in, nothing, just kind of like peace and quiet.
Well, there's a nice, like the ambiance of Callahan Acres, like there's a nice naturey sound at all times that I think is very soothing.
Yeah.
I would totally do the
crickets,
same thing.
Just in there for 5 hours.
In between chainsaws.
Deers walking through the leaves.
But the crunch of leaves.
Yeah, bumblebees. Yeah.
Bobcat, did you say? Bobcat.
Wasps.
The sound of wasps.
The story behind the bobcat is Sheila was convinced a couple weeks ago, maybe like a month ago, in our kitchen, you could see out the backyard, and she's like, she sees something, and she's like, that's a bobcat. And as she had the thought, it jumped away, and she's like, no way, that was a I know that I saw a bobcat. Cut to like a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, she sees on the Lockport Facebook group that somebody else had posted and said,
it's real,
confirmed that we've seen a bobcat in the Fairmont area. What the hell's going on? And so bobcat, that's where the bobcat.
Jackie and Coop.
And then Dark George from Dark Aces.
Correct.
Dark Ace, slept out at Delwood on Friday night. So this is another funny story from Clash.
Mm-hmm.
He was there, Thursday night, sorry. So he had gotten there early to set up his stuff, and he's got his tent out, and he's like pulling a lot of stuff out of the car, and we're looking at each other.
It's like 8:30 in the evening. Yeah.
He's not going to leave all this merch out here, right? Like, that would be a huge mistake. Yeah, definitely, yeah. Let's go stop this before. Yeah. So we go over and talk to him, and he's like, do you want to know what I'm really going to do? And we're like, I don't know, dude. We've only known you for a couple of hours. What the fuck are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
So he's like, I'm gonna put all the walls up on my tent, and I'm going to sleep out here. And we're like, oh, that's sick. Make sure, you know, if anybody comes by or whatever, like, I just wanted him to know that there are police and, like, if anybody comes by, whatever. So we talked to him the next morning, and he tells us that he heard he didn't know the bobcat story yet, a bobcat screaming, and it was, like, surrounding the area and down in the valley of holes 1 and 2 and, like, around the tent screaming. And he said, it sounds like someone's getting murdered. Is what a bobcat scream sounds like.
Well, that Dark Ace is very like a metal brand.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that's kind of like right up his alley, I would think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
What 90s band did Bobcat Goldthwait open up for?
Was it Nirvana?
It was Nirvana. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. The last.
You should host trivia.
For the In Utero tour, they had Bobcat as their opening act.
Huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Alex.
That's a great transition because you were talking about how you had therapy. Out here working on.
Yes, you did. Yeah.
So I actually started therapy last week. I had my first session using BetterHelp, and I had my second session today, right before I got here. And
so does that mean that my therapy is not real and yours is official?
No. I mean, I needed real therapy. I mean,
therapy.
Like, I go to Luxor Escape for like a therapeutic release.
Yeah.
I go play disc golf for a therapeutic release. What you're doing out here is there's all kinds of therapy. I am now talking to a professional to like figure out all the shit in my head.
Yeah.
And I feel so much better for it. And I just wanted to touch on it for a second for everybody that, you know, we talk a lot about mental health on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as I talk about it, like I know, I still really needed to go to a professional to get some help. And I feel so much better just 2 sessions in. And there's a lot more work to be done. But I'm fired up about how, like, I'm very hopeful about how I'm going to be feeling over the next couple weeks, months. Like, there's a long way to go. But just taking that step. First, let me say, if you do need to talk to someone, you need help. Like, it is hard to get a therapist right now. The whole country has a mental health crisis because of the last 2 years. And so all therapists are like overrun with requests. So I am a fairly smart guy, 34 years old, tech job, and I could not for the life of me with insurance get into a therapist. Like it took me months of trying and failing to find somebody that would take my insurance. You know, navigating that system, I cannot imagine doing it if you were somebody who was like really in crisis mode. It's very hard to get into that. So I'm going to shout out BetterHelp as a platform. Just you can go to Facebook or their website, whatever. You type in, here's the stuff I'm feeling. Here's what I'm dealing with. And here's what I'm looking for. And they will match you with somebody. Like within 24 hours, they're like, here's a therapist who specializes in those things. You meet with them. And if you click, you keep talking to that person. If not, they'll send you a new one.
I Super am easy. Seeing and hearing bobcats. Someone, please help me.
Their screams sound like someone's being murdered.
Yeah.
So I'm very fired up to have that going on and excited about the progress that's going to be made.
That's great. Good for you, man.
Cool.
Thank you. There's more, so I'll try to go quickly. Disc Golf Chicago has a very interesting thing in the works. I was meeting last night with a friend of mine who is... He told me his title this morning and I forgot it. I think he's the Dean of Instruction for electives at Noble High School in Chicago. So it's a Chicago public school. And I've been talking to him about how do I get disc golf into his school. And he's like, oh, it's very easy. We just put it on a list. And the students, if they choose to sign up for it, that can be a club that they join. And once students sign up for it, then we'll find a teacher to run the club. But first, the students have to sign up for it. So like, okay, well, they're inner city kids. It's, you know, it's a very like ethnically diverse population. And a lot of them probably have never heard of disc golf. So now we have to figure out how do we get these kids to know that disc golf exists so that once it's on the list, they sign up for it.
How do we reach these kids?
Again, yeah. Exactly.
The theme.
And they run a tournament called the Noble Cup that brings 17 other schools together. And they get these kids from other schools to compete in all kinds of different tournaments. So it'll be chess, basketball, like literally any kinds of electives. Mm-hmm. So if you can get it into one school, they will start to extend it to other schools. And now like disc golf could feasibly be an event at an inner city school tournament that happens every year.
Oh, wow.
So it's a very cool path we're going to start working on. Anybody that works in CPS that is interested in getting a club at your school, please reach out to Disc Golf Chicago. We would love to get that conversation going.
Well, that's great.
So, Ryan, what are you fired up about?
So as of the last episode, I remember telling everyone that I knew that looking for a house is stupid and I hate it and no one should do it. I remember telling AO, the mortgage pro, that looking for a house is stupid right now.
Yeah, now is not the time.
And it's terrible and nobody do it. And then two Saturdays ago, to appease my wife, we found a listing. We looked at one. It was not so good. We looked at the second one and immediately walked into the house, seeing that the house was far better than the pictures had shown, which was a first. Mm. And I saw the look on my wife's face and I was like, this is it. Mm-hmm. So we're in the house for a total of maybe 10 minutes, which is how that happens. And you decide whether or not you're going to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars based on 8 minutes in a home. Makes total sense. So that night we were on the fence about wanting to put a bid in, and our realtor called and said the sellers need to know right now because they are waiting to put a bid in on a house themselves. And they need to know whether they can sell the house tonight. And so we were like, okay, sure. And the moment we said sure, Mom? They were like, okay, you got the house, it's yours.
Wow.
And so within hours, we had purchased a home after only seeing it for 8 minutes. So the next week was me not sleeping every night, thinking about how much of a mistake that might have been. Because we were excited, but didn't quite know. And then met with a home inspector and did all the things that we need to do. And the more we saw the house and the more we knew the details.
Shout him out.
Yeah. John Terry is our home inspector. And if you want Jose Mas style energy and a home inspector that is completely off the wall, but amazing, then John Terry is the guy. But we inspected the house. There was so little that he had to write up that he said he felt like he wasn't doing his job because he couldn't find anything with the house that was wrong. Wow. He found such a short list that I could do it myself and fix everything. It was amazing. Every time we've looked at it, it's been better and better. And now we've signed the contract. So we're 3 weeks. We will own a different home. So we bought a house.
It is beautiful.
It's a crazy good house. And the kicker will be probably in the spring, there will be the workings of a shop space in the backyard.
You're going to need a riding mower, dog.
Oh, I thought the kicker was going to be that I live right down the street.
Yeah.
Well, see, there are ups and downs.
Right, there are.
So I live in a triangle that Thor let me know was the golf cart triangle.
Uh-huh.
Between him and you, Doc, and Twan. And so you take what you can get, right? But super stoked. We're getting a riding mower. We have to. It's a big yard, but we're incredibly excited. The other thing was the timing worked out so that we had just paid a lot of money to send my daughter to a Montessori school for the next year because we didn't think we were going to find a home, and then immediately found this home, and then within days had to register her for first grade, which is literally across the street from our new home. Mm-hmm. But we were enrolled in two schools. Fortunately, we were getting our money back from the Montessori school, but it was just a tense few moments. We will be in the house for 2 days and then she attends her first day of school. So is unbelievable.
That school's under construction right now too.
What school is not?
Yeah.
Every school I go by has
Your district specifically, there's two.
So, but yeah, the house is in Lockport, so I'll be closer to everybody I love and know. And yeah, we're stoked.
Alex, just moved to Lockport, bro.
No more bridge.
Just moved to Lockport.
Trying.
That was
a really nice
town.
That's the other fired up thing that I was going to say is that Liz and I went and saw a house for the very first time today. We're starting the house buying journey as well. Shout out AO the Mortgage
Pro. Terrible time to buy a house.
AO the Mortgage Pro got us pre-approved and set us up with an agent, and we really like the agent. So starting to see houses for the, it's finally real. That's literally what I want, but it's not in the cards.
I'll talk to Liz. It's fine.
We'll end up being in the burbs between Lockport and Chicago. She's still got to drive to Shed every day. So, that's the other thing.
But you'll find out that from Tinley Park, taking 80 and taking the back way is just as fast as living in Lockport, driving up 355 to 55. Timing is about the same.
I do need to investigate that further,
Doc. Doc would know.
Thank you.
Know because I drive downtown all the time.
Yeah.
That is good to know. All right. Longest fired up ever.
That was a long fired up.
You're welcome.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Totally worth it.
We needed that.
Yeah.
Shall we move along to the Cal Hallander Rundown? Brought to you unofficially by
DiscGolfScene.com. Come on, Pete.
Cal Hallander Rundown Summer 3.0, baby.
Yeah.
You know
here's
it is.
The thing. Yeah.
I'm not going to do it to you 2 weeks in a row, guys. Promise. Unstable Open 4 is already live. There are still some spots left. The event is on August 20th and 21st. It is the fourth stop on the GJS train. Choo, choo. I actually put that on there. I put a train
emoji. You wrote choo, choo, choo. Oh, good man.
So Unstable Open, it is live. I want to say there's maybe like 20 or so spots left in all kinds of divisions. So
we just ordered a shit ton of discs today.
Shit ton of discs.
Yep.
Yeah, that's Ryan's gig.
Uh-huh.
Ryan does all the payouts. It's at Highland.
Guess when that is? 4 days after I get my new home.
We'll be fine.
Cool.
We'll be fine.
We'll be fine. Yeah.
After that, 35th Shanahan Classic goes live on Friday, August 26th. The event is on September 24th and 25th. One round of 18 at Shani each day. It is the fifth stop on the GJS train.
GJTS.
What did I say?
GJS.
GJTS train. Choo, choo.
Chew sounds
really,
like
I really chew did
wind. Chew.
It's only in the morning.
It's like he missed train. When we recorded at Embers and always had to hear the train.
Yeah. Sorry, we need a train in the background. Yes. Right now, this whole time, we need train noises. Yeah. J-Town Championships. We've made some changes recently and decided to ditch Delhi and add West Park. We haven't shown much love to West Park in the past few years. It's time we brought the show back to West.
Choo-choo.
Choo?
Hello, Newman.
Choo. This will be a three-day B tier, one round each day. We're excited to do this format and have Tournament Central popped up at three different courses over 3 days. We've never done that. Chew.
Hello, Noman.
Chew. I actually did write that, even though I just said it a second ago. It's right
You know what I am most excited about for being at West Park? Doc can answer.
Rax.
Rax roast beef.
Rax.
For lunch.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah.
I got some banana bread at work today, dude. Hell yeah.
I can already taste that beef and cheddar on an onion roll.
I'm excited. Hell? So normally when people do that type of format, when you've got three different courses, you typically have three different Tournament Centrals simultaneously happening and maximizing the amount of players. We're not doing that. We're keeping the number consistent to what we typically see and just changing Tournament Central from course to course to course, which will be a lot of fun, I think.
Dope.
So I'm excited for that. Getting to some leagues, local leagues. Tuesday nights, rotating schedule is the J-Town Handicap League. It plays the same schedule as Jesse's J-Town Doubles League on Wednesday. It's a sanctioned league, so get those points. It is $15 cash payouts. Schedule can be found at jtowndiscgolf.com. The next three Tuesdays are at Delhi, Highland, and then Trinity. I looked it up at jtowndiscgolf.com and found that information out. Do it yourself. Wednesday night is the J-Town Doubles League. Maybe you've heard someone say Wednesday Dubs over the years. That is this league. Jesse Sains, former guest of the show, as we know, runs a great...
Also pronounced Sains. There we go.
For sure.
Some people call him Sanchez.
I'm still going to say Sains. I'm going to say however I want. Former guest of the show, runs a great cash payout doubles league. The schedule can be found, again, at jtowndiscgolf.com. They will also be following the schedule of Delhi, Highland, and Trinity. Last but not least, the Club Challenge. We mentioned this before. I'm going to mention it again. It is happening on Sunday, August 7th. Tim Kelson is leading the pack for J-Town. He's looking for to fill his roster, so get on it. You can reach out to him via Facebook Messenger, or he is frequently posting on the Greater Joliet page on Facebook. Get signed up. I am signed up.
We got some cool shirts coming.
Rye is signed up. We've got some really cool shirts coming.
Yeah.
Doc refuses to go to Lemon Lake, so he's not signed up.
I'm signed up.
You are signed up for Disc Golf Chicago as well. Going.
Are you guys playing MA2?
Yeah. Yes.
Whatever. I don't
are
remember.
You friends? Can we talk to? Can we get on the same card? Do you think we talk to Mike Kropika?
Oh, I don't want to do that.
Shut up. Yes, you do.
I could try. And last but not least, let's definitely talk about this. The GJTS Finals. If you have played at least two of the GJTS events, you qualify for the end of the year, the finals, where everybody's going to be playing for $400 cash each division. We're going to take the top four finishers and throw them in a gauntlet layout over at Trinity Links.
Dope.
And it's going to be super sick. I can't wait for that. It'll be unsanctioned. So that's the fun thing, is that even M's, you know, MA4, 3, 2, 1 guys are going to be able to get some cash money.
Cash.
Also, looking forward, looking later into the year, November 4th, I believe.
Which is
Friday.
Just 5 days later in the year.
Yes. 5 days later after the finals, we are going to be doing Delhi's 2.0, bitch.
Booyah.
Oh, yeah.
And what do we have planned for the delis this year?
Yes, we've got a lot planned for the delis.
Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Are you ready? Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Are you ready? Are you ready? No, delis is going to kick ass again. I mean, we started planning for that the moment the first delis was over. Yeah, it was as soon as we left, we had already been planning for the next year. So we've got a date locked in for delis, and we will, as the episodes continue, we will roll out more info. Cannot wait.
Bang a ring.
Sick.
Before we leave the Cali Highlander rundown, I'll mention that things are going pretty well at our Monday night Cali League at KLM. It's handicapped, which is the first time we've run a handicap league. So I'm only bringing it up because I'm happy that the handicap system is working out. This week, we had Kevin Derrick and Joe Moore both shot really well down. I mean, you get a mulligan on every hole. So they shot like 42 and 43.
Ooh.
But Riley Gagliano, who shot like
That's a person?
Yes. He shot a 49.
What is
and
his
with,
name?
With his handicap, he ended up taking it down.
Riley?
Riley Gagliano.
If that's his real name.
Yeah.
Riley Gagliano.
Yeah, he's dope.
Sick.
I wonder if he could prove that to Facebook.
So, yeah, come check out the Cali League. Mondays at KLM, 6:15 to 6:45 is when you sign in. It's $10 to play. We usually finish up by 9:30-ish.
Sorry, that's past my bedtime. I have a heart condition.
Mm-hmm. It's past a lot of people's bedtime, but it's a good time.
Also, did you know that the actual first name for a bobcat is Robert Catherine?
No. That was a joke. God damn it.
Bobcat.
Yeah. Robert Catherine. Yeah. On that note, that's the wrap on the Callahan's Rundown, guys. Yeah.
That's correct. And now, why don't we hear from our sponsors?
Right now.
Hey guys, it's Andy O'Day, AO of the Mortgage Pro, here to help with all your mortgage needs. I work with over 15 different lenders, so whether you're looking to buy a home or refinance, if you got perfect credit or even not so perfect credit, I will find a product and the interest rate that fits you best. We can do all the normal conventional FHA, USDA, and VA loans, but we have cool products like no income loans, investment loans, even renovation loans. As always, if you mention Unstable Discourse, you'll get a choice, either a free appraisal credit up to $500 or a travel basket. Shoot me a message and we can get this conversation started. Also, listen to my podcast, Amortize This. You'll learn more about the industry, my team, and our amazing guests. You guys can find me on all social media platforms at AOTheMortgagePro and check out my website, AOTheMortgagePro.com.
Hey, Disc Golf family, it's Andrew Weary with Redemption Disposal and Recycling. If you need a dumpster, we are your go-to local contact. Are you getting a new roof, remodeling your house, or doing some landscaping? Maybe you're just looking to get rid of the old junk to make room for your new hyzer racks and disc golf gear. Redemption Disposal's standard size dumpsters are large enough for most jobs. The 15-yard dump trailers are on regular tires and hauled by standard pickup trucks, helping avoid any damage to surfaces, allowing for tight maneuvering, and the compact style helps minimize any inconvenience to homeowners. Our convenient and speedy service is unmatched, all at a competitive price. You can find us on Facebook at Redemption Disposal or email admin@redemptiondisposal.com. We look forward to helping you out with your future projects, but until then, we'll see you out on the course.
Listen to Unstable Discourse on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, or right from unstablediscourse.com. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you have the time, leave us a rating and review, or just tell a friend. It helps the podcast get to more listeners.
It's time to get into the Tourney Journey Part 2 with the Clash Crew.
Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh.
It's got a nice ring to it.
Rhymes.
You like it's alliteration. Mm-hmm. That's what that is. Oh, part two with the Clash Crew. That does rhyme.
Yeah. Yes.
Didn't even plan it. All right. We're going to talk about how the hell an event like Clash comes to be and what is it like getting it set up, what's happening during the day, how are you guys managing things, and even the
you know, looking back afterwards, we'll talk about the sort of come down from Clash as well.
Yeah.
I think a cool place to start is, when do you guys start planning Clash? Like, when did you start planning this year's Clash? Like, when did the first, all right, guys, we need to have a conversation about Clash. Yeah. When did that happen?
So we submit dates in the previous November of the season. So it starts way back then with getting all the dates for everything submitted to Krupika, who then has to take all those dates from all of the Illinois TDs and map them out over the course of the year. So, you know, like last year, for instance, we could plan to have it at, not on the 4th of July, and then we could just get the 4th of July as the weekend that we get for our event, and you just have to roll with it. So that's really kind of what starts the next 9 months of planning, is what date are we going to get based on the three dates mm-hmm. I have to submit for yeah, each three right. dates. So it really starts there, you know, it's kind of up in the air.
I would, technically, that's where it starts, but yeah. I would argue planning for this year's Clash started at about 9:30 p.m. on the last day of last year's Clash.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Because there are a whole host of things that we are all looking at each other and saying, that's not happening
yeah, next
year.
Yeah, we're never going to do that again.
But can we get a sample of one of the things from last year? That
Yeah, there's videos yeah. of Sean.
Yeah. The night after 2020 Clash 5, of me saying that we're no longer going to do 7 a.m. or 7:30 a.m. tea times is what I said.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of became a focus, but it's funny because we were actually going to have 7 a.m. tea times starting at 7 a.m., but it, so many people dropped out. This is one of those things that you can't plan for it, and you just have to roll with the punches, to where the first tea time ended up being 8 o'clock or 10 after 8 technically mm-hmm. this year. So that was actually a good thing yeah. when, you know, last year yeah. the planning did start.
You have to overbook knowing that right. 3 weeks before there's going to be so many dropouts that yeah. it'll work itself out.
I think there were 70 refund requests over the course of the event being live. So 70 people were signed up that were at one point definitely going to be there, and then, oh, I can't now. So,
which is like 25% of the whole field, right? How many people played?
173, I think.
Yeah.
But getting back to the planning, you know, when we talked about and picked the date, before we picked the date, we said, well, when's going to be the best date when we can attract some of the top pros to come?
Right.
So now we're looking at a tour schedule, going, okay, there's a week here where they're in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
There's a week open, and then the following week they're up in Michigan. So they're going to have to drive around the lake.
Yeah.
So we submit that date. Hopefully, cross our fingers, that's the date we're going to get.
Right. Also, at that point, we don't know because, I mean, the pro tour is just coming to a close in October with their finals. So the last thing I'm going to do is message anybody that I know from DGPT and go, hey, guys, we're planning, you know, like, you don't want to be that guy. So at that yeah. time, we don't even know if we're going to be invited back as a Silver Series. Mm-hmm. So we're doing our best to make sure we've dotted our lowercase j's, you know, when the time comes to get that email from Jeff Spring to say, hey, yeah or no, that, you know, we're ready and prepared for that. So that was another big thing, coming from being a Silver Series the year before and hoping that we were going to be again. We wanted to be, you know, it was a lot, but we still wanted to, you know, maintain that status, and then come to find out that because of the way that everything gets scheduled, there was a conflict and everybody was going to be in Europe and they didn't want to split up the crews. We weren't a Silver Series again.
And as we've seen, the European Open was massive.
Massive.
On a scale that nobody has ever seen yeah. in disc golf. So thank God they had everybody there
yeah.
That they needed, because breaking that up would have been a real big
yeah,
hassle
that's
for them.
Good call on their, yeah. on their part.
I hope this isn't jumping around too much, but at what point does Gatekeeper get involved? Like, how
we had, so it started with Brian Earhart. You know, it pays to know people, you know, mm-hmm. having connections and having a network of people out there, wherever it may be, is always awesome. And because we know Brian, and Brian's a big believer in everything.
I'm sorry, who?
Mr. Brian Earhart.
Mm, okay. Not familiar.
Yeah. So, you know,
we should get him on the show sometime.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. I think I've heard of him.
So having him in the fold and him being out on tour and making connections for us without us even knowing sometimes is huge. Bold. So, Brian was out there and talking with Gatekeeper. I believe the conversation that they had was that Derek from Gatekeeper was looking to start attaching himself and Gatekeeper Media to other A tiers that were larger, not necessarily on the tour.
Mm-hmm.
So Brian said, hey, they were a Silver Series, reach out, at the very least, make the connection. So I think we had a call with Derek in January.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, and at the end of that call, and we were maybe on the phone for like half an hour, 45 minutes. It was like basically sign, seal, delivered. Let's do this. He really liked what we had to say and we really liked his vibe. And, you know, it was at that point, you know, just a couple months later after getting our dates figured out that we knew Gatekeeper was coming on board.
And what did it mean for you guys as the planners to know that there was going to be this specific media company involved?
I can speak for the whole group. I think that it was going into that was like, let's treat this the same way we treated last year. Now, yeah. Now our new third party is Gatekeeper rather than the DGPT.
Mm-hmm.
Because essentially DGPT, other than it being a Silver Series and allowing touring pros to get half points for their overall, they brought media. That's what they brought. You know, they didn't bring much else. And that's no slight to them. That's just really the reality of it.
Right, right, right.
So Gatekeeper coming on board was just another media company. And it's something that we like because we're very proud of the show that we put on, that we want it to be covered because, yeah. You know,
as far as I was concerned, I didn't treat it any differently than last year.
Yeah.
It had the same hype, it had the same feel for me. Mm-hmm. The film crews, the touring pros that stopped by, all of it.
Yeah.
So. You know, and I think even if we didn't even have the media coverage, we still would have had that same hype and feel of that Silver Series event because everything we do, we try to keep raising the bar every time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If Gatekeeper wasn't involved, would you have reached out to another media company?
We never really had that conversation.
Yeah, it never came up because we
have an answer for that.
Yeah, but we had talked to Gatekeeper so early that it wasn't a discussion, but I'm sure we would have probably had to do something.
Thought about something. Yeah. I mean, and maybe, you know, who knows? We would have figured something else out on our own with, you know, the creativity team that we have. You know, I'm sure something would have come of it. I don't know if it would have been necessarily...
Ryan Nick or something along those lines.
Yeah, I don't know that it necessarily would be coverage, but it would be recording what was happening.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah, you've got enough of those contacts. Okay, so after Gatekeepers involved, that they were like the title sponsor or they were just a media company?
Yep.
Okay, so in having those sponsorship conversations, had you thought at all about what another title, like did they say we want to be the title sponsor? Like how did the sponsorship piece of it happen?
Yep, go ahead, Ray.
I mean, that was kind of the deal.
Yeah.
They said, we're going to come, we're going to bring a crew and we're going to film and we're going to do our best to do next day or, you know, close to next day coverage, but we want to be the title sponsor. And I mean, that was kind of a no-brainer, basically, when we signed on and said, yeah, let's absolutely do this because it made sense. We didn't have a title sponsor that we had in mind for the tournament and we were going to need one anyway. So
I think Dippin' Dots presents Clash of the Canyon 7.
How many
next year?
How many Dippin' Dots did we sell?
A lot.
So many.
I stole one.
Nice. You earned one.
So yeah, I didn't think I would get in trouble, but I also was like, I don't know if I'm supposed to ask on this one, but I ate it somewhat secretively.
Yes.
All right. So after we're in January, we're talking media deal is in place, title sponsors figured out. What's the next big thing that has to happen?
Fundraising.
Which really never ends.
Which is my favorite. If we're being completely honest. Thing.
Yeah, you know, right. I'm going to let Doc talk, but yeah, it never ends.
You know, we have high aspirations of the things that we want to do. Unfortunately, those things cost money, you know. Let's have a $10,000 purse that we're going to give away.
We are very greedy about everything.
So I've heard.
Yeah.
Is that why you put gravel all around the canyons? So people would tear up their discs?
Yeah, totally. And so have to come buy new ones? 100%. Yeah, the boulders, 100%.
It's a rumor, but it's really true.
Yeah, it is true. It is totally true.
But I mean, our next thing is fundraising. You know, we kind of not only plan the events, we look at how we're going to cover some of these events. Getting to our tour series, we're putting on an event at the end of the year where we're inviting four people from each division. They're not paying an entry fee, yet we're paying out almost $6,000.
Whoa.
So there has to be some type of fundraising to be able to raise that money. For the Clash, we've added $10,000 to the pro purse. Well, if without a title sponsor of someone saying, here's $10,000, which Gatekeeper didn't, or no other company approached us, and we still have to figure out a way to get that extra money. So I think at that point, the next step was fundraising for the year and try to figure out how we're going to try to raise this money.
What raised the bulk of the money?
Everything. You know, it's not one thing. It's many little things, like doing all of the flex starts that we do that are associated with each one of the events. That's huge. We take, unhit ace pots and things like that. And we just go, all right, well, you know, you didn't hit it. But it's all going to go back into the thing that we all love and you know, afford all these things. And, you know, Clash is just one thing.
Right.
You know, we're constantly fundraising and have a kitty going, and we're replacing baskets and we're replacing, you know, and doing all these things for Trinity and Delwood and Shanny and the list goes on. So.
And then every once in a while we go to the reservation and put it all in black. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we double it.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
And sometimes we don't.
About 50% of the time.
60% of the time it works every time.
It works every time.
That Ho-Chunk Casino.
Yeah.
Sometimes we left a whole chunk of money there.
Yeah. But really though, it never ends, because our work as we see it never ends. The season isn't over. It just slows down. And we do slightly less things, which really it's not. So we just tell ourselves that to feel better about it. So we, you know, we think that we're taking a break. But,
we keep pushing.
As soon as we hit
your
that.
Your break is different than most people's break.
We take 10 days off, and then where we don't have, you know, Doc and I aren't on the phone coming up with the next best idea, or Ryan's not coming up with another logo for the next harebrained thing we've got. It literally never ends. So it makes it easier to, when you're just always in that mode, that what used to seem like mountains are really kind of molehills at this point. It's not too bad. You know, taking on Clash again at what everybody looks at, you know, aside from maybe Ledgestone, the biggest tournament in Illinois.
That's the way I've been describing it to
everybody. Yeah. So, I mean, that's what it takes, you know, never stopping.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the disc golf scene aspect. I know we plan to do a whole disc golf scene episode.
That was huge this year.
But when did you guys say, how do you figure out when it's going to go live? And what was that process like this year?
I decided to do something a little differently going into the season. And that was taking all of the downtime that I had during the January, February, and some of March. And this year it ran a little bit later. This spring really sucked, but took all that downtime and just put all that energy into having disc golf scene locked up. And we had the entire season mapped out on disc golf scene, every aspect of it, before the first tournament even happened.
Mm-hmm. All the pages were set up,
all of them.
Logos were uploaded, the posters,
the about sections, about sections, all the breakdowns. Schedules. On a couple of events, we left it TBD just on some layout things, because sometimes that will change. We're also the people that are adding tee boxes and baskets to courses constantly. So you never know what we're going to have by the time that event comes. But yeah, every detail of everything mapped out, costs. I don't know how many phone calls Doc and I had about, you know, breaking down the costs of an event and where we can, you know, take $2, you know, from each AM player here and make it equal this, which is going to equal this by the time we get to, you know, a Clash situation, to know, okay, this nut's covered.
Gotcha.
So yeah.
Ryan is involved in most of these conversations. Mm-hmm. Doc is involved in most of these conversations. Sheila's involved in most of these conversations.
Totally. The four of us. Yeah.
Is there anybody that is sort of like an unsung hero that's also kind of part of all this?
The grand scheme of all of it, it's really the four of us. It's really kind of become the four of us over the last few seasons. As far as like the creativity, the major planning, I would say, the major planning, you know, the entire year planning is the four of us. I mean, usually when I'm on the phone with Doc, it's at 8 o'clock in the morning, I'm drinking coffee, he's smoking a joint, and that's where the magic happens. And it's on speaker, and Sheila's sitting across from me, you know, and we talk for 2 hours. And then, you know, I usually just text Ryan, because he would never want to sit on the phone for 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And I give him the, you know, Reader's Digest version of what we just talked about for 2 hours. And then I go, hey, we're going to need logos for all these things. And, you know, let's, You know, and then what we do is then we go, okay, well, we're going to plan a day where Sheila and I will go over to Ryan's house and we'll sit in the lab in his basement and we'll just throw all this stuff at him and he turns it into a logo or a trophy idea or you name it.
Disc
you know.
Stamps. Yeah, all that
stamps
stuff.
And everything. All the graphic design artwork and player guides, you know, all that stuff.
There's so much branding that goes around this event. Can we talk about just the branding stuff? So you've got your signs that need branding.
Right.
You've got the discs, the stamps, apparel, social media stuff, players' guides, the trophies.
Informative videos.
Yes.
Oh, that's right. You guys did a great job with that this year, too. Can you talk a little bit about what you guys were doing on the video side of Clash that maybe people didn't have in the past?
So as far as the video part of it goes, it's just a way to, you know, bring our tournaments up to that next level and be able to inform people. We did it two times this year. We did it for the Masters event and we did it for Clash.
The spectators didn't really get to see that, but it was online for them to see if they wanted. But I don't think a lot of people probably realized what we had done for that. And
probably not. Yeah. And to be honest with you, it was meant for the players. We wanted to inform the players. The Masters event and the Clash had a lot of people that were from out of town. There was a lot of people that had never been to the Canyons before. Mm-hmm. So the video was just a kind of our way of stepping up that level, bringing it to the next bar, but also being very informative and letting them know everything that they needed to know from, you know, where the place is located to when they needed to show up.
Where to park, OBs.
Where to park. And then the other thing was the OB. You know, a lot of people don't realize on these videos when we do them, you know, Sean and I and Sheila will go out on the course and we'll walk around the course. Okay, what do we need to shoot? What is the OBs? We have to make up all the OBs.
Yeah.
And we have to go and then shoot it all. And we might be shooting it 2, 3, 4 weeks before the event, or maybe it's a week before the event. Either way, we have to paint lines. We're flagging things. And we might not paint the entire hole, but I mean, we go around every single hole on the course to be able to get those shots. Then I send it, you know, I upload it so Sean and Sheila can see it. And they're the executive producers and, you know, they have to make sure that it's okay. And they'll catch my spelling because I probably was puffing a little when I was, you know, typing something into the computer. And, you know. And then it goes back and forth and, you know, it's like, oh, no, we need to change this, this, and this. And then we get it out and then we send it to the players. And what we found at the Masters event, almost everyone watched the video and thanked us for all that information.
Yeah, and actually commented on it before we mentioned it. Yeah.
Right. Doc is checking, you know, view counts. And we're going, okay, well, based on this view count, like, that's one for every guy that signed up. So that, I mean, we can say that most people have probably watched this video, maybe a few times for some
And we tried to put as much information as possible, even for the touring players that said, hey, here's a map that shows you to get to the fitness place and where you can take a shower. You know,
it even got to the point where some of the players, when we would ask, hey, did you watch the video? And if someone didn't look like they had watched the video, the other players were razzing them like, what? You didn't watch the video? What is your problem? It was great.
That's not a popular thing in tournaments around this country. There's not people that take the time to...
Not yet.
And, you know, they might not, they're not as fortunate that they have the resources to be able to do that, but, you know, that actually will take that extra time for us to do a video like that in the editing time, you know, that's 20 hours of work, maybe gladly spent 4 or 5 hours on the course that day filming it. And then, you know, I make Sean stand in front of the camera.
He loves it.
He does. He really does.
Super love it. Yeah.
The only thing that I can think of that you loving being on the camera is, it's comparable to you and bucket hats, Doc.
Pretty much. Yeah. I think I've made my love for bucket hats known.
So I do, getting back, I do remember when Doc brought this idea of doing these videos to the table. And I was like, oh man, like, this is going to be great, but this is going to be a lot of work. Obviously the majority of the work is on him and we know that. But I have really enjoyed doing them and really enjoyed being able to provide that to players, because the feedback we have been getting is like the thing, again, that thing that fuels us, you know, the feedback, the volunteers and all that stuff, like we talked earlier, that's the thing that keeps us going when we know that the work and the time and the energy that we put into this stuff is being appreciated. We don't need to be told we did a good job, but like, if it's above and beyond, hey, let us know. Because that feels pretty damn good to know that we are one of the only people you've ever seen that's giving you informative videos to show you things that you would not know unless you came here and started experimenting and walking around and figuring it out for yourself. So that's really cool to be able to provide for people. I would enjoy that.
Are you just putting them on YouTube? Yeah.
On Doc's channel, Disc TV. And then we just sending links
maybe
out.
Maybe link to them in the show notes or something for the episode so people can click out.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
I wasn't even a player, but I watched them because I'm going to watch everything you guys do. And I was getting hyped as if I was going to be playing at the event. I was like, oh, I can see. Okay. I see why they did that way. And like, I'm thinking about how I would play that shot. You know, just seeing where the OBs are and everything, I'm sure that's got to be one of the values for all the players is like,
absolutely.
You're getting excited for the event way before the event happens.
Because there's players who've never been to the Canyons before. They've heard it's rated this top course in the world. They don't know what it looked like until they show up. This kind of gives them as kind of a sneak peek at the hole.
That is what she said.
Thank you. That is what she said. Mm-hmm. Even though we might be showing just a little bit of the OB, you know, and I think it gets the players hyped a little bit too. It's like, this is, looks like a really cool hole. I want to play.
That is, again, also what she said.
Right now.
I hate to tell you this as a listener, but there's still months of things that are happening before. But I'm going to jump right up to opening day, or let's go to the night before.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just talk about what happened this year. Day before.
Just briefly talk about Wednesday and Thursday, where we put in 10 hours.
All right, let's jump ahead to the week of Clash. So there's obviously lots of things that happen in between, but... Mm-hmm. We'll say the week of Clash, what was happening, top priority projects for you guys?
Really just going around and making sure the course is up to snuff. A big one this year, the lower part of the fairway on hole 13 going to the B pin has been one of the only eyesores, in my opinion, at Delwood.
It's been neglected since last year's Clash.
It's been neglected for 7 years since we started working down there and having the concept of a B pin in the lower part of that fairway. And we begged and pleaded every season, hey, can we get this cleaned up? And it just kind of like was promised and then it never really happened. When it came, you know, to the week of Clash, it was like, I absolutely want this area cleaned up. Can we please make this happen? And
We were planning for a full 2 days.
Yeah, we were planning on having to do it ourselves, not to the degree that it was done, because once they were finished, it was perfect.
Yeah.
But Ken from the Park District and the rest of the guys were down there for 2 or 3 days straight and cut down all the trees I needed cut down, removed all the trees that I had cut down over the course of the last 7 years, and laid up against the hillside, which is what the eyesore was. Mm-hmm. So if you were taking the proper gap going down to the B pin from the white tee, you were, as a righty, if you were hyzering out, you were landing in this area that was just a bunch of dead logs laying up against the side of a hill.
Not even a safe lie. Like,
terrible. Right? So huge eyesore, and Ken and the boys were able to get in there and just, they cleared all that stuff, cut down trees, mulched two paths all the way down to the basket.
Just regraded the whole thing.
Just phenomenal. Phenomenal. What I've always been asking for, and they totally killed that. So having that taken care of by the Park District, it was kind of like, okay, well, where can we better put our efforts
I think we cut down a total of like 5 tree limbs.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay.
Yeah. Course is good. Because, I mean, let's face it.
You're maintaining it year-round.
Yeah. The Delwood is always pretty well-maintained. There's a couple of little things. There was a branch that was kind of hanging low on 18 thrown to the A-pin that we were like, let's get this cleaned up. But beyond hole 13, there wasn't a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
But painting lines and doing all of that course maintenance stuff is huge and tedious, not because it's a lot of work, but because we're also thinking it through as we're doing it and going, okay, maybe do we need to change this and do we need to reword, which we did a lot of this year.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of rethinking and rethinking again as we're painting lines, mostly due to the fact the creek, Fraction Run.
Yeah.
You know, it was crazy dry. We were in a drought.
Yeah.
And there was, you know, we were kind of going into it thinking, well, let's just, you know, leave it, if you're surrounded by water, you're OB. And after going around and doing all this course maintenance stuff on Wednesday and Thursday, we were asking for feedback. And it was, you know, Doc and I had stopped and talked to Juliana Corver and...
Never heard of her.
Yeah. And so...
Juliana who?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So super Juliana? Sweet, you know, like she is exactly the type of pro whose feedback I really enjoy because she's very professional about the way that she says things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what she had said was, and it's... I've used this word many times since she said it to me, that there were too many holes in spots where the Krig was coming into play where it was ambiguous. And it's just going to become a problem for us and our cards. Is there anything that you guys can do about it? And we just looked at each other and said, absolutely. This is our job. This is our job to make it not ambiguous for you for three rounds.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so we got on it. And where we don't typically paint lines, we painted lines. And it, depending on each hole, it just kind of becomes very difficult, you know, like behind the basket on hole four. First of all, spray painting onto a park that's 120 years old is not something I just go out there like, oh, no, man. It. We're just going to spray paint everything. You know, like I'm a hippie. I don't want to do that to begin with. Mm-hmm. So I'm already going into that with, am I going to get a phone call from one of the commissioners on, you know, the Tuesday after the event going, get down here with a toothbrush and get all this shit out. You know, like this is a concern of mine all the time. So, you know, I didn't really want to do it, but we had to. So, you know, like I was saying, hole four with the gravel being right behind the basket, there's really no great spot to spray paint these lines. And you end up having to do it in areas where, you know, we just typically wouldn't want to. And we did that for a lot of holes. Four or five holes, I think. I mean,
yeah, we ended up doing that. And the feedback once we did that was exactly what we wanted to hear.
Yep.
Everyone that had played, replayed once we painted was, yes, that's exactly what we needed. It's exactly what we thought it should be. Mm-hmm. And where we painted the lines was where the creek typically would have been, you know, the water line. So it was as if the creek had been flowing normally. So I think it was as fair and as well as we could have done Friday. Anyway, yeah.
And it was also, get back to what Sean said, you know, we also are looking at it and go, well, where can we paint this line where it's going to be gone next week? Because it's in grass and it's in some light gravel.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Where we're not painting a rock where it's going to be there 3 months from now. Right.
Yeah. And all of that happened. Having the call from Juliana, that happened like with only a few hours to spare on
Thursday.
So we were adding, again, this is not something you typically want to do as a TD. Definitely not during play. We all saw how that went down at Worlds last year or whatever that was, where mid tournament they changed OB rules. Mm-hmm. But this was like the day before, and I'm like, damn, this is reminding me of hearing all the horror stories of Worlds and Utah and everybody freaking out. So I was like, man, let's just get this done and like keep our fingers crossed that everybody is good with it. And like Ryan said, that was the consensus.
So that was, I mean, a full 8 to 10 hours on Wednesday and again on Thursday. And then it was also changing the player guides and changing all of that to upload
all
again.
All the verbiage we had to
so
change too.
So Friday morning when they started play, they had exactly what they needed. Accurate. And it matched the OB rules in their PDGA live scoring.
And then changing it also on the PDF files for the player guide.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's some of it is easy on Ryan's end doing the graphics. That stuff's pretty easy for him to edit. Not that we ever want to do it, but it's not always as easy to go in and modify things on PDGA. Like, you know, in some cases you're just changing a rule that's listed for the OB section of that hole, but it can be tedious.
Yeah.
Interesting thought is while you guys are week of and you're dealing with these last minute projects and changes, I'm sure you put a lot of pressure on yourselves to deliver the best experience you can. Mm-hmm. In the midst of that, you're probably also getting emails, DMs.
Constantly
from both players, from volunteers, from sponsors, from vendors. How do you guys manage all of that communication?
Her name is Sheila Callahan. She is sitting to your right.
The lady in the shop.
The lady in the shop.
I specifically crafted this question to get Sheila on the mic. Sheila, will you jump on for a little bit?
Yeah. So yes, to answer your question, Alex, a lot of that is Sheila, especially with the volunteers. Organizing all of the information, I would say, is Sheila.
Yeah. And once I did all of the signage, it was just sent to her and she just took care of the printing and all
the
that.
Hundreds.
We went and picked them up.
Of signs.
Yeah, but there was a lot of signs. T signs, sponsor signs.
Directional signs.
Yeah, directional signs.
Anything signage is Sheila. I mean, we're getting to the point where it's like, okay, yeah, everybody kind of has jobs.
Yeah.
You know, with Sheila, it's volunteers and signage. I'm the guy that's answering all of the disc golf scene stuff. So every single refund I'm taking care of. Every single DM through that question about anything I'm taking care of. Doc's on weed control, so he's the one that's supplying all the weed that we smoke.
Absolutely. But I'm also the guy who calls them up before the tournament going, all right, what do we need? What do we still have to do?
Yes.
What needs to be done?
He is quality control.
You're the guardrails.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much. Yes. He keeps everything in line and reminds me every day all the things that I have to do.
Good.
But I love it. I'm not saying that. I'm horsing. I love it because with all these things going on, it's easy to be forgetful. And sure. Like having Doc in my ear every day going, oh, yeah, got to do that thing. And then it gets done because we work as a team.
Sheila, can you talk about how did you get volunteers and like how are you figuring out who's doing what job?
Sure. So this year I put a form on our website and asked volunteers to sign up that way. Last year we did it through Disc Golf Scene and that got too like muddy with the spectators and the sponsors. Like it was just too much information. I needed it to be separate. So I made a form on our website and people just put their name, their email, their t-shirt size, and then their availability and what they preferred to do. Because I know everybody is comfortable in a certain job. Sure. And I want to know if you've, you know, if you've never been a spotter before, you know, I'm reluctant to put you there. You know, it's not a hard job, but I want to make sure that you know what you're doing. That started, I want to say, in March. And
people were volunteering
around the time that we had the events go live.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, correct. I started advertising for that.
It's hard to, I guess that is pro weekend. So I was thinking about the people who chose to volunteer rather than play, but I'm sure a lot of those people play during AM weekend.
But, which is another thing, too. I mean, we did it last year, but having those separate is huge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was the only way to do it.
Yeah. And I let all the volunteers sign up and then I wait till like 2 weeks out to start putting them in their positions because I get people that say, I'm sorry, I can't volunteer. And then I get last minute people that want to sign up after we've ordered the t-shirts and done all this stuff. I look at the schedule, what they're available for, the days, times. And I've scheduled people before as a manager. So it's second nature to me.
What's it like being on site in the shop or around Tournament Central? You're dealing with customers in the shop. Well, I mean, I think mostly Jason and Mark were really handling
that
the show.
That is key. So like Mark stepped up and worked all week.
He was so good with customers.
Yeah, he gave us, we wanted to have at least one day off leading up to it so we could like get our minds straight and take a minute. So Mark really stepped up and we were able to do all the behind the scenes things without being in the shop and trying to multitask because it's impossible. You'll start an email and then 2 hours later you're sending it. It's key to have Mark in the shop that whole week and then Jason hopping on. I'm pretty much hands off. And then as long as I schedule the volunteers properly, and they show up, it's kind of just a well-oiled machine.
There was some moments of like, I don't want to say panic, but there were some like high pressure moments that we should talk about. There were a tree fell down. Like we all heard the tree fall, a big tree fell down in the middle of the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody had a moment of, where did that happen? Is everybody okay? Is it going to screw up?
Yeah. I mean, it was a pretty uneventful weekend. We had tornadoes, trees falling down.
Multiple. Yeah.
Bees nests, white hornets.
Not the bees, no.
Yeah.
Injured players,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Walked down the wrong way because they couldn't read one of the signs.
I actually have a little note in my phone that I'd like to read about what took place just on Saturday. You ready for this?
Right. I mentioned Friday was a perfect day.
Yeah.
The tee times went off
on
time.
You know why?
The weather was great.
Right.
We didn't run behind.
Yeah. You know why Saturday and Sunday weren't perfect? Is because we kept saying on Friday how perfect it was.
Right.
Yeah.
Mother Nature was like, here we go.
Which, by the way, we've already planned for next year to not say anything at all about the weather or how great a day is.
Mother Nature.
Ever again.
Like, it wasn't even forecasted to be terrible, and it turned out to be terrible.
So on Saturday alone, I'm just going to read this real quick. Saturday alone, we started the day with tornado sirens going off at 5:30 a.m. We had a tree fall down on 17 overnight in front of 17's white tee. So panic mode. Had to get that taken care of. Reached out to
giant Ken. Tree.
Reached
stretched
out to Ken.
The entire
huge,
fairway.
Massive 70-footer. Reached out to Ken with like an hour to spare before the first card would be getting to that hole.
Wow.
And they had it gone and dragged out of the way, cut up totally.
Didn't even
know it was there. Mm-hmm. We had a two-hour delay because of the weather.
Lightning.
Because of the lightning. For 2 hours. So, and on Saturday, it wasn't like how we did it on Sunday. And we'll get to that in a minute. Saturday was a little different because we were just going 30-minute increments every time that the lightning hit. And we had to do it that way because it was happening. It had all, the tournament had already started.
Right.
which was different from Sunday because on Sunday it hadn't started yet and we just postponed it 2 hours. On Saturday, it had already started, so we had to just go by like every lightning hit, which just went on and went on and went on and went on. So we were just postponing it every lightning hit by 30 right. minutes.
I was there. The shop was full of players who had, I would say, fairly friendly vibes for the fact that they were, you know, holed up during a storm and wanting to play. But I feel like in the shop, vibes were good. Players were being really cool.
Yeah. In the meantime, Sean and I are staring at two different radar sites and two different lightning apps. Yeah. And saying the word every time the light lit up went, shit, there's another 30 minutes. God damn it.
So not done with Saturday. So we had, as we were mentioning, the huge tree that fell over by two blue tea. And that happened. And we had that panic moment of like, is everybody okay?
I fully expected to hear somebody scream after that thing came down.
Seriously. And or getting there and going, well, it's laying across the tee box or it's laying on a basket or it's, you know, hanging from hole two down into four's green or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it ended up just being right next to two's blue tee and had just fallen and everything was okay and everything kept moving. We had a player roll his ankle, a guy from North Carolina.
Yep.
His name again, Jermaine Barksdale. Super cool guy. He stepped down the steps going to hole one and just rolled his ankle. He said he had rolled it before, but he knew it was bad. And he showed me and it was terrible. It looked like a softball. But he took it like a champ, man. In situations like that, my fear is always that they're going to be upset with us. That it's going to be like a total turn and it's going to be like, this is terrible. And I felt so bad for the guy and he just played it so cool. And he was, I don't want to say he wasn't embarrassed, but he was just bummed. Yeah. He was like, I want to be here. Yeah. It wasn't even the matter of like it being so far away from home. He was like, I want to be playing this event right now and I can't because of just a silly little thing where I didn't pay attention for a split second.
Yeah. We just kept asking him what we could do for him. And he was like, nothing, man.
You know, it is what it is. Into action right away with ice packs and got his leg elevated. And, you know, that's like you were already managing all these things.
Yeah.
And now how do I take care of this guy who just got seriously injured?
Right. You have to be ready for anything.
So then also we're learning in the afternoon that the park district, and this is really where it was a panic thing for Sheila, that they had double booked the area where we were using for the parking. Mm-hmm. And she came and told me, and we were already managing all this other stuff and dealing with the weather. And I was like, you know what, honey, just roll with it. Like at this point, like, what are we going to do? We're not going to go over there and fight them like sharks and jets, you know, like, come on, like they're going to take the parking and we're going to have to park people somewhere else, which we manage. And we really never had an end conversation with that. Like what happened with all of that?
So
start from the beginning. Like what was the story?
I had Mandy and Maddie sitting at the front gate checking spectator passes and like people were paying at the front. And because of that parking situation and it was raining, I just pulled them. I was like, you know what? We can't do this because no one's parking over here. They're not going to come find this random tent. Mm-hmm. So they went home. I flipped around all the signs, tried to write with Sharpie in the rain to not park in the grass. Which
after we had just been telling people for days to park in the grass.
For months, where to park. Yeah, it was fine. And because of the rain, I think we didn't have that like high of a spectator count anyways. So it worked out.
We weren't the European Open. There wasn't 5,000 people there.
Yeah, it could have been worse. And then we went back to normal parking in the grass again on Sunday. So it was just a little flip-flop.
Right.
But it all worked out.
Also, still on Saturday. So I had gotten a text. I think it was Robbie Berry had told me about a ground yellow jacket nest on 6A and needed to go check it out. Somebody had just gotten stung. Great. Okay. Well, we'll go over there and, you know, paint a circle around it and just call it hazard. If you land within it, you could take relief from behind, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And that was also something, and this is kind of cool, that with the PDGA live scoring, I was just able to send out a message and let everybody know, hey, I just painted the circle. This is what it means when you see it, yada, yada. Took care of that. As we were spray painting that line, I got another text from another person about a tree on hole 15, which is their second hole, 14 to 15. Same thing going on. All within 1 hour, we had to go and manage two different hazard insect situations. Mm-hmm. After all of that other stuff that we just read. Mm-hmm. And it was just one hell of a day on Saturday.
I said someone was playing Jumanji.
It was a TD test for sure. And
again, a testament to the volunteers because we were able to go do that stuff.
Right.
And just leave Tournament Central while, you know, we took care of that stuff and everything just kept on running.
Yep.
Yep.
So I'm going to try to expedite this a little bit because we've been going a little bit long, but there's just so many cool details I want people to know about. Yeah. So bear with us. We're gonna fast forward a little bit. We're gonna jump to Sunday morning. Let's hear what was going on Sunday morning, and then we're gonna jump to how did the day play out, like the finals.
Yeah. So we knew going into Sunday that it was gonna look pretty similar to Saturday. And rather than starting things and having to stop them for some players and push off the start for everyone else, we decided to, because of the timing, to just delay the entire day an hour and then reassess. And that was fantastic. That was one of the best decisions I think we've ever made as a team at a tournament.
Yeah, that coupled with eliminating five of the holes for everyone. And so on Saturday, eliminating five of the holes for MPO was paramount because they wouldn't have all finished.
Yeah.
That would have been a nightmare. So that was the only way we could have done it. But making it 13 holes for everyone on Sunday and eliminating most of the creek holes was the only way that we could have had that play out, because the lines that we had we'd painted those lines four different times.
Yeah.
On the creek holes, because the creek kept rising and falling. And so now there are lines in the water and outside of the water and a foot into the creek where you can still see the line, but do you play the line? Do you play the water? And it was, again, ambiguous. So,
and poor Mike Apostolou was doing all of these player meetings and discussing all of these changes day to day to day. Fun fact, MPO played three different layouts at Clash this year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Three completely different layouts.
Yeah, but doing that was the only way to do it, and making those changes early and quickly, letting everyone know, was such an easy decision once we did it.
Mm-hmm.
It was so quick. Everyone understood. Everyone was ready to go and just followed through with it like nothing had ever happened.
And I didn't expect it to go that way. I thought for sure, we do this a lot, and there's a lot of people that whine. There's a lot of whiners out there, a lot of them. And they don't hold back. And I fully expected to get a lot of nasty emails from people about having to chop to 13 holes on Saturday and having to chop everybody down to 13 holes on Sunday, and not a single person. I was very happy about that. I want to say that it was because of how well we communicated all the information, like Ryan was saying.
I agree. I think it definitely was the way we communicated. Yeah. Because it wasn't just that first hour. We let them know. We pushed it back a whole nother hour, but we let them know that 2-3 hours beforehand. You know, we got to the course, we looked at the radar and said, you know, that 1 hour, it's still not going to work. Let's make the call. Let's push it back another hour. It looks like we should be good by then. And that's what we did. Mm-hmm. You know, we got that information out to all the players. They didn't have to show up there on time. And, you know, I think everybody got that information and was happy that they received that information.
I have to think that's correct, because I was hanging around Tournament Central most of the weekend. I didn't hear a complaint, not a one. Everybody was like chilling and understanding. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, they were.
Hey, this is the decision they had to make.
Yeah, it was great.
And you know what's funny is all day Saturday and Sunday, you look at all of the players, and a lot of them that are, you know, touring and trying to make a living doing this, and they have such a game face on. And so the whole time I'm thinking, oh man, they are just not having a good time. You know, we're going to hear about it later. And every single one of them that I saw had a giant smile on their face once they, you know, hit that last putt. And everybody's having such a good time. And we have to remember that they're not upset at us. They were so focused on their game that they didn't even care what the layout was. They just wanted to pipe those drives and hit those big putts and then call it a day. Mm-hmm. And when it was all said and done, everybody had a great time.
Speaking of calling it a day, let's talk about how the day finished. Sunday finished with things that I want to talk about real quickly are the Dan Schlitter
story.
I mean, dude, talk about that story for a second.
Yep.
What was it like watching the champions and the, you know, the end of the day, what's it feeling like for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, the Dan story, obviously everybody knows how we feel about Dan. We love Dan. He's our champion in and outside of, you know, Clash. He is our guy. You know, we put him on feature card and he played really well. And then he was on lead card going in, you know, second round. Mm-hmm. It was like, all right, dude. And then he was on lead card again going into third round. And that was, you know, kind of we're feeling it. But also going back to 13 holes chopped, and it's like, shit, you need to turn it up. like, you have got to make this happen in a short, in 10 less holes than you would have normally had to be able to do that.
Right.
You know? And he was there, and I walked along with lead and feature card all three rounds. And I go back to just a couple of flubs that he had on holes, and he knows which ones they were. And he just, he let Gannon get the advantage over him. And then he just held it because that's what Gannon's going to do, because he doesn't make mistakes.
Ice cold, dude.
Yeah. I don't want to take away any of the thunder from Gannon Burr winning, but I was sad that Dan didn't win. Yeah. I want, you know, we're all the same guy. We grew up in the same time. I've watched all the movies. You know, I get that feeling. That's the feeling that I get when I think about competition, is like the Chicago Bulls in the 90s or the Mighty Ducks movies or Rocky. I get those feelings when I think about what we do. Mm-hmm. So I want Dan to win again, because that is the story.
The way I feel about it is, this is just the beginning of what Rocky 2, when he loses to Apollo Creed.
Yeah, you know,
you got the decision. Man, I won, but I didn't beat him.
Right, so there is more to that story.
Sure.
You know, it's going to happen again. But yeah, you can't take anything away from Gannon. He'd not seen the course before. He just straight up slayed it all weekend. And he was one of those players that I was talking about, that he just had such a game face on. It looked like you didn't even want to approach him. But when you did, he was just a 17-year-old kid having a good time. But he had such a game face on. He putted for so many hours before his round. It was unbelievable. But I mean, he played his heart out. He deserved to win.
Yeah. Like Dan said, he's the next generation. And it's kind of cool to see that.
I think, and Dan's, the way he composed himself as the guy who just, you know, lost the ending that we all wanted to see.
Oh, his speech at the end?
He picked Gannon up and like hoisted him up like, look, everybody, look at your champion. Mm-hmm. Like, he gave the fans such an experience, and he did the most integrity driven thing you could have possibly done in a moment where you had to be kind of disappointed to some level. You have to be.
Yeah.
That's what makes Dan an ambassador to the sport. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Exactly. He went up and did, you know, at the trophy ceremony, he gave this amazing speech, touched on all the things that you want, you know, that a champion should really touch on.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have three other winners too. So FPO, Hannah Wynn, this was her first A-tier win. So you could totally see the emotion on her face and Chris Clemens' face. And it was really cool to see that happen.
Definitely.
At the Canyons. Yep. It came down to her and Sarah Gilpin, and came down to the 18th hole.
Yeah.
So
it was such a good,
we watched that one finish out.
That whole round was amazing to watch, and to see Hannah, like, once she won and she was up kind of at Tournament Central, and you could see her kind of like, what do I do with my hands? Like, she was so excited that she couldn't emote properly for a little bit, but she had a huge smile and she was great.
There's a great photo from Lauren that just like, you can, like, Hannah's smile is like leaping off the photo. It's
absolutely
crazy.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, Yeti.
Mm-hmm.
You had another
Yeti coming out
there
for the first time. And, you know, getting to hear how he feels about the track and the place and the vibe and the event and the communication, like, you know, he's a guy that we hold to a high regard. You know, we give a shit about how he feels.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just 10 out of 10, you know, so that, and he put up on Facebook, and not that those mean a whole lot, but when they do that, and it just feels really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it feels really good to make a guy like
him and Des
happy.
Both.
We don't do this for the thank yous. We do it because we love to do it. It is a good feeling when you do see that thank you, or
absolutely,
that they pointed out that, you know, you guys are above and beyond.
It makes it
anybody else
all feel they worth see it.
It makes it worth it giving up all the time that we do.
And then, of course, Al.
Our own Al FD Hermosillo.
Took down another one. He's a three-time Clash champion. He won Clash 1 in MPO, and then he won Clash last year MP40 and this year MP40.
Correct.
But with Yeti, you know, he's been doing this a long time. Him and Des both a very, very long time, and they've seen it go from nothing to European Open style level. And, you know, when they say you did a good job, they count more.
And he kept saying how after Worlds, they would not play normally, and so they would have to skip it. And that's why they did last year. But the reputation preceded it, you know, this tournament this year. And he and Des both, he said, were exhausted. But once they got out and practiced, he said they needed to be out here and play. And that was, I mean, he couldn't have said more.
He'll be back.
You know? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So that was great.
All right. Well, we've recapped, you know, all the mishaps, all the planning, you know, how things kind of played out.
Can I add one more thing before you end this?
Yeah, please.
So with the other thing that people don't know, as soon as that event was over and we had everything cleared up, the first thing we did was go to have a drink, of course. But the first topic was, all right, let's talk about the event. What went right? What went wrong? And what do we have to do for next year?
Yeah.
So we were already talking about that hours after that last trophy got handed out.
Yeah.
We were already talking about next year's clash.
What happens?
Every year it gets more dope.
Mm-hmm.
It killed me to not be able to play this year. I tried to sign up as soon as it drops every year. Mm-hmm. This year just wasn't in the cards. But also I was really glad that I got to volunteer.
You were Alex the Tram Seminary.
The way some players get to keep their same job every year are some, volunteers.
Yeah.
If I could be golf cart man forever,
you
please.
You got it.
Sign me there's up. Family guy. There's tram guy. You can be tram guy.
I'll take tram guy. I still worry that there's a joke I'm missing, but I don't care. I'll take that.
No, you're good.
No, there's not.
We'll come up with one. Don't worry.
Yeah, we'll make one though.
All right. Honestly, listeners, there's 1,000 other details that I would love to share and to ask about myself. But there's just not enough time. So I think it's about time we hear from Jason for once.
He's sleeping on the couch. He's dreaming about North Carolina.
Can we get into the mailbag, please? Jason.
Okay.
Good. Jason, are you awake?
I'm awake.
All right, then let's get into the mailbag.
Mail time.
Mail time.
Mail time.
Mail time. Mail time.
Doc isn't going to do it.
Mail time.
Okay. Yeah. Good job.
Take it away, Jason.
I got just one question for you tonight. It's from Nick Kaminsky. And I think this is going towards Sean. What are your future plans on course upgrades, such as landscaping and stuff?
So when I read this earlier, I wanted to plant a little seed out there that this September 20th is the... Mm-hmm. 8-year anniversary of the course.
Mm-hmm.
And
what else starts with eight?
The eight loop also starts with eight. So I don't know. Maybe there's going to be something cool. It's not a bridge, so don't ask me if it's a bridge. Shut the fuck up about bridges. But there could be. Get over the bridge.
Yeah. Hey, well done.
There could potentially be something cool in the works.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Keep an eye.
Transporter.
Yeah, Alex is going to be out there every day, 7 days a week,
carting
people back and forth.
Our new tram guy.
Tram time. Cover my
tram time. Tell me, what is the part-time gig pay? I'll drive people around Delwood every weekend.
Yes.
Our next question comes from Jake Kotke. He wants to know, what goes into getting some of the higher profile touring pros to attend? Are they pretty aware of Clash at this point and plan for it early on? Are there efforts to reach out to any of them specifically to gauge interest?
Money is the biggest factor, but I will say this year, and I will not make this mistake again, we didn't register the event earlier in the year. So once everybody had already had their schedules, we didn't put Clash on the PDGA. We hadn't paid the sanctioning fee yet. So that is something that I'm going to do different next year. Is I'm going to make sure I'm paying those sanctioning fees up front so that everything is listed so they can see the A-tier schedule, because they are only really looking for A-tiers because of the amount of money that has to be added.
Mm-hmm.
At the very least, it's going to be $3,000. In most cases, it's going to be closer to $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $25,000. So they're looking for that money. In the past, I've reached out to players, but I let it happen. I let it unfold the way that it does because
I think we just line ourselves for disappointment when we reach out to pros like that. Right. And a lot of them are really cool and say, yeah, I can't make it. I've got this or this, but some of them just blow us off. And that,
There's so many people that I will go to get their PayPal information, and I'll go to the messenger conversation that we have with Facebook Messenger, and I'll see the last thing that I sent them was an inquiry about coming out to a tournament, and they just blew me off. So it happens, but I've done less and less of that every year. I let them kind of come to us. And then there's like cool stuff where, Danny Beauchamp was talking with Kayla Visca and asked if Danny could give my number to Kale and he could connect us, because Kale heard about Clash and wanted to come out. And I was like, oh, sweet. Yes, so dope, definitely come out. I got a spot for you. And a lot of that will happen after the event is live and full in most cases, because there's just people that are like, Kale LaVisca can do that. He can supersede signups because he's Kale LaVisca. Report me to the PGA if you don't like it.
Dare you. Just great.
Just a great one.
That's a wrap on the mailbag.
That's a wrap on the mailbag.
Yeah.
And that is a wrap on this episode. Thank you guys for listening. This was a long one, but there's a lot to cover. You don't even know. We could have done an episode twice as long easily.
Been here all week.
But we appreciate you guys listening. Thank you for coming out to Clash. Thank you to the volunteers. Thank you for everything you do to help make our community great. And until next time, you guys, keep it on the fairway.
Hey, good night, y'all.
Peace. And shout out to all the guys that mentioned Unstable Discourse while they were at Clash Weekend. I appreciated it very much. Thank you.
Jason loves when you do that, guys.
Unstable Discourse is produced by Sheila Callahan. Edited by Ryan Fancher. Beats provided by Alex Seminary. And produced in association with Unstable Disc Golf Gear. Look good, feel good, play good.
Unstable Discourse is a Top Secret Studios production.